Hello, I'm ISS's Global Head of Research, Georgina Marshall, and welcome to this May 2022 podcast with the Halftime Report as part of our Bulletin Season Insights series. In this edition, we'll discuss what has transpired so far in the main Americas, European, and Asia-Pacific AGM seasons, taking a look at the interesting trends to date, some upcoming key meetings to watch, and projecting forward to look at a number of remaining upcoming AGM hotspots. So let me introduce you to today's presenters. For the Americas, you'll hear first from a first-time Bulletin participant, Anna Wong, a senior analyst in our Canadian research team in Toronto. Then US research head, Mark Goldstein, and a senior member of our US compensation research team, Galen Spielman, both in the US. Europe will be covered by another first-time Bulletin participant, Sarah Onofri, a member of our Southern European research team in Brussels, and our head of UK research, Christopher Osborne, in London. In Asia, Warren Chen, our research head for Asia ex-Japan, will give us an update from his home base in Singapore on the main Asia seasons. And then Takayuki Ishida, ISS's head of Japanese research and based in Tokyo, will be joining us with a preview of the upcoming Japan AGM activity. And for our final section today, Ana Luisa Farias, a senior member of our Latin American research team, will give us some highlights from the recently concluded LATAM proxy season. So with that, let me bring in Anna Wong in Toronto. Welcome, Anna. Let's focus on some insights from the 2022 Canadian season so far. To start, where does Canadian season stand currently, and what are the trends on executive compensation to date?
Thanks, Georgina. Overall, the Canadian season is close to halfway done, but we are now past the peak for composite index companies. The majority of large financials and energy companies, the two largest sectors in Canada, are in the rear view mirror at this point. And in terms of executive compensation, I would say compared to last year, there are fewer companies where executive pay is an issue. And we expect this trend to continue for the remainder of the AGM season. In 2021, the market moved higher, and generally, CEO pay was also higher, given improved corporate results and the end of many pandemic-related pay reductions. We expect the overall shareholder support level for this season to be similar to previous years. However, there have been a small number of meetings with strong shareholder opposition. At Agnico Eagle Mines, for example, the say-on-pay resolution received only 24% shareholder support, mainly due, we believe, to pay-for-performance misalignment and pay magnitude much higher than peer companies.
Thanks, Anna. What about board-related issues? What are you seeing there?
Regarding director elections, the new ISS gender diversity policy for composite index companies went into effect at the start of 2022 AGM. If the board has less than 30% women and does not commit to the 30% gender diversity threshold by the 2023 AGM, a withhold vote for the nominating committee chair is recommended. According to the latest annual review by the Canadian securities regulators, about 22% of total board positions are occupied by women, and 35% of vacated board openings were filled by women. We have so far identified several composite index companies with insufficient gender diversity. It will be an interesting new point to watch for in the remainder of the season.
Indeed. And climate-related issues have also continued to be an area of interest in Canada, as in most other regions. What can you tell us about this year's shareholder proposals seen to date on climate?
We're definitely seeing more climate-related proposals than in previous years, for sure. The large banks continue to receive the bulk of these climate-related proposals, despite the presence of a large energy sector in Canada. Particularly attracting attention has been a shareholder request for the adoption of a say on climate vote. This shareholder proposal was filed at the six largest Canadian banks, all of which had already had their shareholder meetings. Support levels ranged from the lowest at 15% to the highest at 27% at the Toronto Dominion Bank. At this time, the only Canadian companies providing a say on climate vote to shareholders are two railroad companies, Canadian National Railway and Canadian Pacific Railway. Both companies have TCI Investments, one of the main proponents behind the Say on Climate campaign, as the largest and second largest shareholder respectively. We have also seen a few other novel climate-related shareholder proposals, most of which have garnered less than 10% voting support.
Thanks, Anna. And before I let you go, are there any high-profile Canadian meetings coming up to highlight for our listeners?
Yes, the Shopify meeting on June 7th is getting a lot of attention. The company has a dual class share structure. Class A shares have one vote per share, and Class B shares have 10 votes per share. The founder CEO now has approximately 34% of the voting power. Shopify is seeking shareholder approval to add a new founder share to its share structure. If approved, this founder share together with his existing Class B shares would basically lock the founder's voting power at 40%. It will be interesting to see how investors vote on this one.
Thanks, Anna. Next, let me bring in Mark for the US. Welcome back, Mark. How is US proxy season progressing? Have we passed the peak yet?
We have indeed. At this point, we're publishing more meetings each week than are entering our queue. We've published more than 2,200 meeting analyses at this point, including over 350 of the S&P 500. By the end of this week, we should be about two-thirds of the way through proxy season, measured by the volume of reports delivered.
And based on what you've seen so far, what are some of the defining characteristics of this U.S. proxy season?
Well, perhaps the biggest development is a major increase in the number of environmental and social proposals on ballots this year. We're tracking 284 proposals, ENS proposals, year to date, and that compares to 209 for the full year in 2021. This seems to reflect a greater willingness on the part of the SEC to deny companies no action requests and to allow such proposals to go to a vote.
Very interesting. How about shareholder proposals on more traditional governance topics? What trends are you seeing on that front?
We're continuing to see proposals on a wide range of governance topics, even if there haven't been any new breakout proposal categories in recent years. For meetings through May 31st of this year, there have been 34 proposals on ballots seeking an independent board chair. That's almost identical to the 33 proposals we saw in the same period last year. And indeed, many of the targeted companies are the same in both years. Through May 31st, there have been 6 shareholder proposals seeking to eliminate supermajority vote requirements compared to 7 last year, and 2 proposals to declassify the board compared to 3 last year. Many of the companies that have been targeted with these two proposal topics have tried multiple times to eliminate them, but have been unable to clear their own supermajority hurdles to do so. But companies do keep trying. So through May 31st, we've seen 40 management declassification proposals, and 41 companies seeking to eliminate their supermajority vote provisions. In something of a reversal from recent years, only 5 companies have been targeted with written consent proposals through May 31st, but we've seen 92 proposals relating to special meeting rights. The vast majority of these seek to amend the terms of an existing special meeting right to lower the ownership threshold, and often to eliminate the one-year holding period that many companies have in place. That latter issue is a new area of focus for proponents in 2022. As in past years, many companies targeted with such proposals have responded by submitting their own proposals for a lesser reduction in the ownership threshold. So giving shareholders a choice between a management-endorsed threshold of 15 or 20% typically, and the 10% threshold usually sought in the shareholder proposal. And in a sign of how widespread proxy access has become among large U.S. companies, through May 31st, there was only one shareholder proposal seeking a new proxy access right at Charles Schwab, to which management responded with its own binding proposal to adopt proxy access. We've also seen half a dozen shareholder proposals to amend existing proxy access rights, usually to eliminate the 20 shareholder aggregation limit that most companies have adopted. I also want to touch on 2 compensation-related shareholder proposal topics. Calls for companies to submit their change in control severance agreements to a shareholder vote have had something of a revival this year, with 12 proposals on ballots through May 31st, compared to only 1 in the same period last year. And a new proposal topic seeking the adoption of a policy on 10b5-1 plans for executive stock trading that would, among other things, require a cooling off period between the adoption of such a plan and initial trading under it, was on the ballot at Abbott Laboratories, where it received around 49% support, which is quite high for a first-year proposal.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for that rundown, Mark. What are some of the upcoming meetings that shareholders may want to have on their radar?
Well, May 25th is shaping up to be the biggest day of the year in terms of the number of high-profile U.S. meetings on that date. ExxonMobil and Chevron hold their meetings on the 25th, as do Amazon.com, Meta Platforms, and Twitter. Those five meetings alone have a total of 44 shareholder proposals, environmental, social, and governance, as well as at least three Vote No campaigns. Twitter's meeting is, of course, taking place against the backdrop of Elon Musk's offer to buy the company, but shareholders won't be voting on that deal until later in the year. The following day, May 26th, brings the McDonald's proxy contest that I mentioned on our last bulletin call, as well as the last of the major banks to hold its AGM this year, Morgan Stanley. And looking a little further ahead, Alphabet and Walmart are holding their meetings on June 1st, followed by Netflix on June 2nd. Netflix is noteworthy as the company is finally taking action to improve its governance after ignoring the results of numerous shareholder proposals on governance topics over the last decade. There are management proposals on the ballot to declassify the board, eliminate supermajority vote requirements, and provide shareholders with the right to call a special meeting. And finally, toymaker Hasbro has a contested director election, and that meeting is scheduled for June 8th.
Thanks, Mark. And let's now turn to US executive compensation and to Galen Spielman. Welcome back, Galen. What are the recurring themes around executive pay that you're seeing as we approach the second half of the US proxy season?
Well, Georgina, the 2022 US proxy season marks the second year of executive pay proxy disclosure under pandemic conditions. And the impact of the pandemic on executive pay remains a prominent theme that is carried over from the prior year. We have observed that many companies that made pandemic-related pay program changes in 2020, such as shifting to a more discretionary annual incentive program structure or increasing the weighting of time vesting equity awards, return to their pre-pandemic pay program structures for 2021 that are being voted on this year. This approach aligns with the expectations of many investors we have spoken to, which is that companies would return to more formulaic and performance contingent incentive programs that are more compatible with a pay-for-performance philosophy. Now, not all companies took this approach. One example that comes to mind is Carnival Corporation. In 2020, Carnival did not make adjustments to its annual incentive program, nor did it adjust its predominantly performance-based long-term incentive program, notwithstanding the devastating impact of the pandemic on the cruise industry, which resulted in forfeiture and below-target payouts under the respective programs. However, for 2021, Carnival shifted to a discretionary annual incentive program and granted entirely time-based equity awards, citing pandemic impacts. Now, based on the level of support for this year's Say on Pay proposal, many investors disagreed with these decisions, as Carnival received less than 64% support at its annual meeting in April. As such, Carnival will be subject to ISS's Compensation Committee responsiveness policy next year. We will evaluate the board's engagement efforts and actions taken to address shareholders' expressed concerns.
And speaking of board's response to shareholder concerns following low say-on-pay support, there was a record failure rate for say-on-pay proposals in 2021. Are there any recent or upcoming meetings where the board's response to last year's failed say-on-pay vote result may be of particular interest to our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So on May 12th, in fact, shareholders cast their votes on the advisory compensation proposal at Intel. Now, in early 2021, the newly appointed CEO received new higher equity awards valued at approximately $110 million. Now, the 2021 say-on-pay proposal received less than 40% support, and several of the concerns expressed by shareholders during the company's subsequent engagement efforts centered on the structure and magnitude of these new higher awards. Well, the company provided enhanced disclosure regarding the CEO's new hire awards, which are actually reflected in this year's proxy pay tables, given the timing of the grant, and made pay program changes in response to certain concerns expressed by shareholders. The proxy did not disclose any meaningful actions to address shareholders' expressed concern around the magnitude and structure of the new hire awards. It will be interesting to see whether investors will be satisfied with only new disclosure around the awards rather than actual changes to the award's structure or magnitude.
And are there any other noteworthy meetings as we enter into May?
Yeah, so in sticking with the theme of new CEO pay packages in the TMT sector, the technology sector, our listeners will likely be interested in the upcoming Amazon meeting, which will, as Mark noted, be held on May 25th. Now, in connection with his promotion to the CEO role, Andrew Jassy received an equity award valued by the company at over $210 million. The award has a very long total vesting period of over 10 years, with the majority vesting occurring between 5 and 10 years after the grant date. But investors may have been surprised to learn that it lacks any preset performance vesting criteria. Now, the proxy notes that the awards are intended to represent most of the CEO's compensation for the coming years.
Thanks, Galen. And we'll now move to Europe. I'll first welcome Sara Onofri, a member of our Southern European research team in Brussels, into the discussion. Sara, hello and welcome. A number of continental European seasons are already past their peak. How are those season dynamics in Europe currently?
Thank you, Georgina. That is right. Voting season for Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, Belgium and Nordics are past their peaks and slowly winding down. In Italy, even though few large cap companies will order AGMs at the end of May, like the big one Enel and Leonardo, more than 90% of the Italian annual general meetings already took place. In Spain, approximately the 60% of the AGMs have been held so far, while in France, nearly the 50% of the large cap companies are still to hold their meetings in the last 3 weeks of May. And lastly, in the Central and Eastern European markets, we are expecting the main volume of companies to hold their meetings from the last week of May until the end of June, except from the Romanian and Hungarian markets, which already have passed their peaks.
Thanks, Sara, for that good overview. So now that the Italian season is almost over, which recurring issues or themes have you seen so far at coming up at Italian AGMs?
Well, as in previous years and similar to many other European markets, executive pay was again a central theme for this year's Italian season. In 2022, we observed a decrease in same pay positions specifically linked to structural inflation adjustment related to the pandemic. On the other hand, a trend we are observing, and this is true for companies throughout Europe, is financial company performance leading to high level of achievement of preset targets. This might be a sign that target setting in early 2021 remained challenging for compensation committees, given the uncertain circumstances, while the economy largely recovered towards the end of the year. This resulted in many pay plans paying out above target levels, bringing pay to above pre-COVID levels. Specifically for Italy, the 2K issues determining a disconnect between company practices and best market standards were, again, termination payments and insufficient disclosure on performance metrics and corresponding targets for viable compensation components, especially if we look at the long-term incentive plan, both ex ante and ex post. For France, Germany, and Switzerland, many companies decided to review upward the remuneration package of their executives that has been frozen during the pandemic, but some of them failed to provide compelling rationale for those increases, and some ended up facing substantial dissent. Particularly notable was the case of the German pharmaceutical company, Bayer AG, where the 76% of shareholders rejected the remuneration report.
Thanks, Sara, and we'll come back to you on some other European trends and key meetings in a few minutes. But let me now bring in Chris Osborne, our head of UK research. Hi, Chris, welcome. Let's continue with executive pay. What trends have you seen so far in the UK in the area of remuneration?
Hi, Georgina. So in respect of trends that we have seen so far this season, we've certainly observed a higher level of bonus payouts when compared to last year, as companies continue to recover from the impact caused by the coronavirus pandemic. In many instances, bonus payouts have been at near maximum levels, despite performance not necessarily having returned to pre-COVID levels. There are multiple contributory factors for this, but from what we have seen to date, it has typically resulted from significant improvements in year-on-year performance, as well as difficulties faced by remuneration committees in setting stretching bonus targets at the start of the 2021 financial period, given the uncertainties caused by the pandemic. The UK team has reviewed bonus outcomes on a case-by-case basis, being mindful of the appropriateness of payouts in the context of company recovery, taking into consideration such factors as whether companies had taken government support during the year in response to difficulties caused by COVID, whether they had reinstated dividends, the treatment of the workforce, and whether bonuses were awarded in the previous reporting period.
And have there been any noteworthy vote results on pay so far?
Yep, certainly. So in the past week, we have seen notable dissents at Ocado, Standard Chartered, and GlaxoSmithKline in respect of their remuneration-related proposals. GSK, approximately 40% of shareholders voted against the remuneration policy proposal. Our report had highlighted concerns with a proposed increase in the executive's bonus opportunity in the context of the company's impending demerger, which will materially reduce the size and complexity of the company. At Ocado, approximately 30% of shareholders voted against the remuneration policy and the proposed amendment to the 2019 value creation plan. Our reports had highlighted concerns with the proposed extension of the VCP, as well as a proposed increase to the award pool and maximum individual allocation. These were considered to exacerbate previously highlighted concerns with the high level of quantum that could be delivered under the plan. And at Standard Chartered, approximately 30% of shareholders voted against both the remuneration report and remuneration policy resolutions. In respect to the remuneration policy, our reports had highlighted concerns regarding the treatment of outstanding LTIP awards in certain good leaver circumstances. Regarding the remuneration report, concerns were highlighted with the decisions taken by the remuneration committee in response to a record fine issued by the Prudential Regulation Authority, that's the UK banking regulator, for failing to be open and cooperative with the PRA and for failings in its regulatory reporting governance controls. The remuneration decisions taken did not appear to adequately reflect the gravity of the failures identified by the PRA. Neither did they fully utilise the provisions available to the remuneration committee to reduce awards in recognition of failures in risk management, financial reporting and financial losses due to a material breach of regulatory guidelines.
Thanks, Chris. So, Sara, let me come back to you again to update us on any other notable developments and interesting meetings in continental Europe so far. I think there have been a few.
Well, Georgina, in Germany and Switzerland, it has been a particularly high-profile season in regard to discharge votes. Notably, we have seen shareholders vote against the discharge of the board of Credit Suisse, where the 60% of shareholders rejected the discharge due to a range of risk and control issues revealed by investigation and settlement, which entailed substantial monetary and reputational costs for the company and, by extension, its shareholders. Other high-profile meetings related to the board accountability issues have been at German automakers like Volkswagen, BMW and Mercedes-Benz Group due to further fallout from the diesel emissions scandal as well as the fine imposed by the European Commission in July 2021 of approximately 1 billion euro for collusion and restricting competition in diesel emissions control. The Italian proxy season, on the other hand, witnessed some high-profile board election held through the Italy-specific voto di lista mechanism. Following a similar trend during the last 2021 season, an increasing number of incumbent board of directors seized the opportunity to submit a slate of candidates. We have 11 proposals in the last 2 years. In 2022, there have been two Italian proxy files related to the board renewal, one at Assicurazioni Generali and the other one at Banca Popolare di Sondrio, and in both cases, the outgoing board presented its own slate. In Generali's proxy fight, the board slate, also supported by Mediobanca, a shareholder with a 17.3% of voting rights, received a 56% support, while in the case of Banca Popolare di Sondrio, the board slate received a 53% support.
And is the Italian market also seeing any say on climate resolutions? And can you give an update on where else say on climate voting has come up in Europe so far?
Well, yes, in line with the emerging global trends, some Italian companies are starting to take first steps toward climate-related commitments. During the 2022 proxy season, we saw the first Say on Climate proposal put forward by transport infrastructure operator Atlantia, whose meeting was held on April 29th. and the company climate transition plan received the 98% support and reflected a net zero ambition by 2040, scope 1 and 2, and by 2050, scope 3. The company will give shareholders an advisory vote on its climate action reporting every 3 years. Also in France, several companies are giving say on climate votes this year. And the first set of results still show high support levels, as was seen in 2021, but dissent appear to be increasing. For example, in Switzerland, there have been two high-profile climate votes, one at Credit Suisse and another one at UBS. At Credit Suisse, the Europe's fourth largest fossil fuel financier, there was a shareholder proposal to amend the company's bylaw to improve alignment, disclosure, and reporting in relation to the oil, gas, and coal sector. And the proposal was rejected by the 77% of the vote represented. Lastly, in Spain, the oil and gas company Repsol gave its shareholders a new say in climate proposal at its MyFADGM.
And how about in the UK, Chris? Has there been a continuation of climate-related proposals at UK companies this year as well, especially following the 10 or so say on climate proposals that we saw last year?
Yes, as expected, we've seen a continuation of climate-related proposals with at least 9 recorded at UK-listed companies so far this season, typically at FTSE 50 companies specialising in oil, gas, mining, banking and financial services. Of note was the say on climate proposal at Glencore PLC, the commodity trading and mining company, at its April AGM. Glencore had previously proposed its climate strategy at its 2021 AGM, which received 94% shareholder support, and sought approval for its progress report at the 2022 AGM. However, just under 24% of shareholders voted against the progress report this year. The 2022 ISS report highlighted significant concerns in respect of the company's timelines for future coal production and its status as a responsible steward of coal. Coal use will need to be drastically phased out in the coming years to meet the goals of the Paris Agreement, and is responsible for the majority of the company's Scope 3 emissions. And it's Scope 3 emissions that continue to present the biggest challenge for many companies. In the worst cases, incomplete data makes it difficult to assess the integrity of the transition plans, while for others, the use of emissions intensity targets rather than absolute emissions reductions has drawn increased scrutiny. As a result of this, other concerns and evolving expectations, dissent to transition plans has increased in 2022. Barclays and Rio Tinto, for instance, both received nearly 20% votes against at their AGMs. This is a rapidly evolving space, and what was considered good enough last year is no longer considered good enough today. And the same is likely to be true next year.
Good point, Chris. And lastly, what can we expect in the second half of season in the UK, which is traditionally also very busy for the upcoming month or two?
Yes, I think we can expect to see a continuation of higher bonus payouts that we've already seen so far this season. And in addition, I think we will continue to see companies incorporate ESG metrics into their variable remuneration schemes, both in respect of annual bonus awards measuring performance in 2022 and long-term incentive awards that measure performance over 3 years.
Okay, thank you, Chris and Sarah. Now we'll leave Europe and transition to Asia. On the two previous podcasts so far this season, we focused on the major markets in the Asia region, China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore and Korea. In this edition, Warren Chen, our head of Asia ex Japan research, will give us an update on some of the markets in the Southeast Asia region so far. Warren, I believe you're going to talk about Indonesia, Malaysia and Thailand today. Have the proxy seasons started in those markets? And if so, what trends and issues are you seeing?
Well, thank you, Georgina. We are just at the beginning of the Indonesia and Malaysia seasons, while the Thailand season has just wrapped up. So let's talk about Indonesia first. The Financial Services Authority of Indonesia in 2021 issued a new regulation permitting the listing of shares with weighted voting rights or dual class shares, in part to attract tech companies to list on the Indonesia Stock Exchange. And this regulation follows the footsteps of Hong Kong and Singapore, which both have made similar changes to their respective regulations a few years ago. And true to form, on April 11th, we saw the IPO of the GoTo Group, the first company with weighted voting rights being listed on the Indonesia Stock Exchange. The GoTo Group is the largest multi-service digital platform in Indonesia, and the company raised about $1 billion US through the IPO. So following the listing of GoTo, the new regulation may attract more listings of tech companies with dual class shares. Next, let's move on to Malaysia. Over the years, certain Malaysian manufacturers have been under increased scrutiny for allegations of forced labor practices. The allegations include poor working and living conditions, withholding of wages, and retention of IDs of migrant workers. Now, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency has imposed bans on the relevant products of companies where it found evidence of the use of forced labor. And the product bans push companies to make corrective measures to address these issues and improve transparency through additional disclosures. So these issues could ultimately impact the re-election of directors at these companies this proxy season. And we may actually see even wider implications. The customers of these companies with alleged forced labor practices could also be negatively impacted. Earlier this year, in February, Dyson, the British household appliance manufacturer, was sued by a group of former migrant workers of ATA Industrial, a longtime Malaysian supplier of Dyson, seeking compensation, alleging that Dyson unfairly benefited from ATA's unlawful labor practices. So as you can see, this matter highlights the continued focus on social and human rights issues in many developing markets.
Indeed, and social and workforce issues and weighted voting rights certainly are issues that are top of mind for many investors globally too. So what about any big issues during the Thailand proxy season?
Yes, so this one has to do with cryptocurrency. So effective April 1st, 2022, the Securities and Exchange Commission of Thailand implemented a ban against payments using cryptocurrencies and other digital assets. The regulation prohibits digital asset business operators from facilitating the use of digital assets as a means of payment in order to prevent potential impacts on the stability of the country's financial system, the overall economy, as well as potential risks towards the public and business sectors. But the regulation still allows the investments in digital assets. And it appears that despite the ban, the draw of the digital assets is too great for companies to ignore. So this proxy season, we actually saw a number of Thai companies seeking shareholder approval to amend their business objectives and article of incorporation to allow them to trade, exchange, and or invest in digital assets in accordance with the relevant laws and regulations.
Thanks for that, Warren. And let's now turn to Japan and Takeyuki Yoshida, our head of Japan and Asia research in Tokyo. Welcome, Take. As our listeners may be well aware, the main Japan season is always challenging due to the immense concentration of so many AGMs in a short period. Effective planning is therefore essential to handle the tremendous volume of meetings that your team and many of our clients will deal with in the next month or so. With that in mind, what will be the expected peak AGM dates for the 2022 Japan season?
Georgina, we anticipate that 2022's peak meeting day will be Wednesday, June 29th, when 26% of June annual meetings, or about 440 meetings, are expected to be held based on best current estimates. This is followed by Friday, June 24th, which is expected to be this Japan season's second busiest day, with about 21% of anticipated June meetings.
And Japanese boards have long been under scrutiny for their general lack of transparency and accountability resulting from insider domination. But we've seen some positive trends in recent years. Do you expect this boardroom improvement trend to continue this year?
Yes. In recent years, many Japanese boards have improved in terms of independence and board gender diversity. A recent ISS analysis of Japanese board composition finds a marked uptick in board independence and female board representation. At the close of Japan's March 2022 mini season, ISS found a 13 percentage point jump in companies with at least a one-third independent board, which is based on the Tokyo Stock Exchange or TSE classification. In addition, we found a 12 percentage point increase in boards with at least one female director for companies listed on TSE's Prime, which is the former first listing section, compared with the same time in 2021 March. Again, in terms of board gender diversity, more Japanese companies are adding female directors to their boards. The number of boards of prime listed companies that held their AGMs in March with at least one female director rose to 74%, which is a significant increase when compared with 67% as of December 2021 and 55% as of December 2020 for the full 1,800 plus prime listed company universe.
That's very interesting to hear of those changes. Thank you. We'll change direction now from boards and diversity to shareholder proposals. Do you anticipate any trends in shareholder proposal activity for this Japan season?
Yes. One notable development is the spread of environmental shareholder proposals. As far as we are aware, environmental NGOs submitted climate proposals at Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group, Tokyo Electric Power Company Holdings, Chubu Electric Power, and Mitsubishi Corp. The proponents include NGOs, which are Kiko Network, Market Forces, Friends of the Earth Japan, 350.org Japan, and Rainforest Action Network. The proposals are intended to seek better disclosure concerning climate risk management information.
And finally, Take, on Japan for this introduction, what are some of the key meetings to watch for this Japan season that you'd note for our listeners?
Shareholders should keep an eye out for meetings at Mizuho Financial Group and Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group. First, Mizuho Financial Group. Since February 2022, Mizuho Bank, the core banking unit of Mizuho Financial Group, has experienced more than 10 incidents where system failures disrupted ATMs. In addition, the bank executed foreign wire transfers without appropriately conducting a check on money laundering when a system failure occurred in September 2021. Japan's Financial Services Agency, FSA, and Finance Ministry issued administrative orders to address the situation. In order to take responsibility, Mizuho Financial Group President Tatsufumi Sakai and Mizuho Bank President Koji Fujiwara resigned in April. In place of Sakai, in February 2022, Masahiro Kihara was appointed as the president of Mizuho Financial Group. Next, Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group. In April, SMBC Nikko Securities and its staff members, including a former vice president Toshihiro Sato, were charged with alleged stock market manipulation. SMBC Nikko Securities is a wholly owned brokerage company of Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group. Allegedly, they placed large orders to prop up share prices of certain companies shortly before market close, which they bought from large shareholders to be sold to investors after market close in what are known as block offers. Some clients have suspended business with SMBC Nikko Securities, negatively impacting their revenues. As parent Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group aims to shift away from its traditional lending business, given years of low interest rates, the securities company's compliance program appears to be a blow.
Thank you for those insights and pointers for the main Japan season upcoming, Take. And finally, for today's podcast, we're going to welcome Ana Luisa Farias from our Latin America research team to take a look back at the 2022 LATAM proxy season, which has just recently wrapped up. Welcome, Ana Luisa. LATAM season typically ends in April. Let's open our conversation with your initial overview of the season, shall we?
Thank you, Georgina. Yes, of course. In 2022, the research team covered 879 meetings, a number 1.2% larger than 2021. Proxy season in Latin America continues to be extremely concentrated, which creates ongoing challenges to international investors. This is well illustrated by the shareholder meetings distribution in the two largest markets in the region, Brazil and Mexico. Approximately two-thirds of the Brazilian meetings took place during the last week of April, and it was particularly concentrated in the last four business days of the month, which had 63% of all meetings. The same 4 days also saw 51% of the Mexican meetings.
Yeah, busy days. And what can you tell us about the format of these shareholder meetings? Before the pandemic, virtually all shareholder meetings in the region were in person. And I know that largely shifted to virtual only formats in 2020 and 2021. Did that change this year? Are shareholders again allowed to attend meetings in person if they choose to do so?
The answer to this question varies according to the country. We have the case of Mexico, for example, which since the beginning of the pandemic was slow on the adoption of virtual meetings and kept the majority of its general assemblies still held in person, which remained unchanged in 2022, with all but one meeting of Mexican companies covered by ISS this year being held in person. In Colombia, the strong preference for in-person meetings also remains, with approximately 80% of the meetings being held in person. On the other end of the spectrum, all but one of the Peruvian meetings were virtual only. Brazil and Argentina also had mostly virtual meetings. About two-thirds of the meetings in these two markets were exclusively virtual. Only Chile had a majority of meetings in hybrid format.
And before we move on, disclosure and transparency by Latin American companies has been a key area of focus for investors over a number of years. What can you tell us about the levels of disclosure this year?
Timely disclosure in Brazil continues to improve. And after a recent change, the regulation now requires Brazilian companies to call their annual meetings with 21 days notice from previously 15-day requirement. However, while most Brazilian companies are providing more timely disclosure, the meeting concentration in the market is worsening. As I mentioned before, in 2022, 63% of the meetings took place in the four last business days of April, up from approximately 60% in 2021. So we can see the trend moving in the wrong direction, unfortunately, and the challenges in the market remain. In addition, while we saw a lot of activity from minority shareholders nominating board and fiscal council candidates in Brazil, illustrating a very active shareholder landscape, in many cases, the information was of such nominees was disclosed just close to the meeting for international shareholders to be able to act on it. In the rest of the region, disclosure remains somewhat fragmented. In the Spanish-speaking markets, companies disclose pieces of information at different times, preventing shareholders from having a more comprehensive view of the proposals presented at the annual meetings, especially related to the election of directors. Having said that, things are improving, and disclosure continues to show a modest upward trajectory in the region. The positive evolution is especially clear in Mexico, the region's second largest market. In 2022, 46% of companies with a full board election provided timely disclosure of the nominees, compared to approximately 38% in 2021.
Thanks, Ana Luisa. And that ends our May Halftime Report podcast. Many thanks to our speakers today, and most of all, thanks to you, our clients, for listening in. We hope that you found this session useful and informative. We'll be back with more bulletin season insights, both podcasts and written notes, over the coming weeks. Please watch your emails over the course of the coming weeks for full information on and links to this season's Bulletin Season Insights series, including a standalone Latin America season wrap-up podcast where our LATAM experts, including Ana Luisa, will discuss the 2022 AGM season in more detail. From all of us at ISS, thanks again for joining us, and please stay safe and secure. Goodbye.